Welcome to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast, where trauma survivors become healthy thrivers. Each month, we'll feature a theme in the trauma recovery and empowerment field to promote your recovery, healing, and learning how to build dreams. Here's your host, Karen Robinson, transformational coach and therapist.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast. Today, we have guest Mila Johansson. Mila helps authors write and publish their books. She makes the process super, super easy for those of us who are new at this, or even oldies who want to have a simpler process but benefit from working with her. So I have her on our podcast today because she also has some trauma connections. So I thought she'd be a beautiful person to come on to help any survivor who would like to tell their story or tell another story even. So Mila, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm honored.
So I know I didn't do your bio justice, so please feel free to tell us more about yourself and about the journey that led you to becoming a famous author and publisher.
Well, you know, I'm a public speaker and a writer, and I like to I'm from a family of teachers, so I became a teacher, and I love to make anything accessible, whatever I teach. I teach Etsy and eBay, and I teach all kinds of things at the local school for adults. But when COVID came, I decided to pivot, and I took all the classes I could, and I started putting all my classes online. So mainly I'm coaching and teaching online now, which is, you know, I love Zoom. I think Zoom is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to trauma, I grew up super poor. We didn't have dinner some nights. I went to school with no lunch and watched the other kids eat lunch. But the thing is, I don't want people to feel sorry for me. I tell that story so that we will go out and help those kids now who don't have lunch or dinner. And because in the end, I married an organic farmer and I have all the food I want. In fact, we give 10,000 to 20,000 pounds of citrus a year to the food banks. I just became a giver. Even when I was young, if someone said, oh, I like your blouse, I'd give it to them. I could go to the thrift store and get another one. But I was partially raised by my grandmother, and I put this book out recently about her from Cowgirl to Congress, because she was one of the main suffragettes on the front lines when we, all us women, got the vote. She worked with Carrie Chapman Catt and Alice Paul. She was their lobbyist.
Right. And
because it took a lobbyist to get the bill through, the bill through Congress. And so she worked with Carrie Chapman Catt, who was a militant and didn't want the men involved and only wanted to march and do signs and go hungry and do the whole thing. And then she worked side by side with Carrie Chapman Catt, Alice Paul was militant, Carrie Chapman Catt, who wanted to be a parliamentarian. So, you know, Jesse always said, if we didn't have both of them, we may not have gotten the vote in 1920.
It's an amazing story. And your grandma, I believe, was also a trauma survivor.
Oh, major, major. It's funny because I speak about her, she and I, you know, growing up that way without a lot of support as children or young adults. And so, but her story is way more dire than mine. We went hungry, but other things didn't happen to me. She grew up on a cattle ranch in Pueblo, Colorado. And you know, in her family, there was incest. Mm-hmm. I don't say this to everybody, and murder. I didn't put all of that in the book because I wanted the family who still lives there, who reveres the matriarch, the patriarch of the family as, you know, the family salt, you know. And so I touched on it lightly, and she lost, you know, a little sister and a little brother, and her mother was when she was 10. But that same day that her mother died, or the day before, she and her mother had gone into Pueblo and listened to Susan B. Anthony speak from the back of a wagon. And Jesse remembered at 10 years old, looking up into her face and saying, I want to do that when I grow up. I want to help women find themselves and be powerful. So she did end up doing that. A teacher saw how brilliant she was and helped her escape becoming just another ranch hand or the cook for the ranch by sending her to Smith College in New England. And that's where she thrived. She was there for 4 years and she loved it because she did have to do all the cooking and dishes up until that point. And when she got to Smith College, they were serving whole meals and she didn't have to do any housework and she didn't have to do any more dishes. And she loved it. All the other girls were very wealthy and they came from families that already had cooks and housekeepers. And they complained about the food because it wasn't, you know, their gourmet dinners at their right. mansions. And, but my grandmother.
Perspective.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And Jesse said, I never complained for 1 minute because I didn't have to cook it.
Oh, your grandmother sounds amazing. Yeah. Oh, and I'm so glad you wrote about her.
Yeah, well, she, you know, it's funny. I'm the family archivist. And when she passed away, she didn't pass away till she had a career till she was 94 to inspire us, right?
Wow.
Till she was 94. And, you know, and she's such a good example of living through more tragedy than most of us can imagine. And then coming to Smith College and then everything opened up for her at that point. And
I didn't say anything.
Sorry. Her first job was putting together the Pulitzer School of Journalism with one professor in 1911. And then her second job was great because she went into social work for the rest of her life. And she helped set the first minimum wage for women in America in Boston. Because when things happened in Boston, then they would radiate out to the rest of the country. And they went from, if you can imagine, $4 a week to $8 a week. And yeah, and they were getting the children out of the factories at the same time. So then they sent her down to DC for her next job to be the lobbyist to help set the minimum wage for the entire country. So that's how she met Carrie Chapman Catt and Alice Paul. Alice Paul had a house across the street from the White House. And she had this huge group of militant women that worked with her. And she would invite them all to lunch and dinner. She had a cafeteria. She thought, well, if I feed them, well, I'll get the work done, right? So Jessie went to lunch almost every day there and hung out with those women. But she didn't want to join them because she wasn't particularly interested in being fed through her nose with tubes like some of them had. And she wasn't a marcher. She was a parliamentarian. So she clicked her high heels down the halls of Congress. And I should probably tell you the story about the meat packers, how she took them down. Should I tell you that story?
Tell any story you would think would benefit our listeners. Stories are powerful.
Oh, everybody, really tell your story, everybody. In fact, I'm telling everyone, write your memoir so your children will know you were young ones. But anyway, she was going down the halls, you know, working for the women and she was setting the minimum wage and all of that. And she saw this room and they were having meetings in there every day. So she went in and it was the meat packers. The meat packers were like Chicago hoods back then. They would get everybody to bring their meat to Kansas yards and then lower the price so people would lose their shirt. And it happened to her father. Her father was a cattleman and he had put all his cattle on trains, you know, a lot of money, and got them to the Kansas slaughter yards. And when they got there, they lowered the price. So much so that he lost his shirt, but he couldn't ship them back to Colorado because that would cost more money. So she knew the story. She knew what they were doing, and they were taking them to task in Congress in a private session. So she started going in and taking notes and writing articles, but no one would print her articles because they all were being paid by the meat packers with huge one-page ads that some they were bought off by the meat packers. But she had a friend in the Christian Scientist office, and they weren't running the ads, and so her friend could run the article. So she went in every day for a long time, for like a month or two, and wrote an article, took it down to the Christian Science office. They ran the article, and then once it was ran in another paper, all the other papers could run it. So then President Wilson finally had to listen after all the articles came out and had to change the law that they couldn't do this anymore to the cattlemen. And so single-handedly, Jessie took them down. And I think if they would have known it was her, she might have been murdered.
So she did it under a pseudonym?
No, she wrote the articles and the Christian Science Monitor put out the articles, not even written by her, as if they were writing there.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a story.
I know.
So tell us the name of the book one more time and also where people can find it.
Yeah, this one is from Cowgirl to Congress, and we kind of brought her into the modern age by giving her what's his name that does that look with all the different people and the same person in different colors? Andy Warhol look. And it's on Amazon. You can buy it on Amazon, or you can order it through your own bookstore if that's something you'd rather do. And there's an ebook and a paperback and an audio book. I found a beautiful reader to read the book kind of in a voice that I thought was like my grandmother's, not when she was in her 80s and 90s. And in fact, in her, she worked for, you know, being the lobbyist for the movement. And after 1920, when we all got the vote on August 18th, she followed her husband to England because he became the trade commissioner there. And she met Bernard Shaw, George Bernard Shaw, and she started speaking all over London with him and was his speaking partner. And he loved her because he was a teetotaler and a vegetarian. And he didn't believe in alcohol. He had an article called Alcohol is Just Like Murder. And she had a talk about the prohibition. And so he would have her speak next to him after his speech because it corroborated what he was saying about alcohol. Because he knew it was ruining so many people's lives, you know, coal miners and so many different people. And so she spoke all over London with him, and she met her best friend, Lady Astor. And until I digress. All her archives were sent to me, and it took me 20 years to start looking through them because I was raising a child and I was teaching and, you know, work. And when I started looking through them, I found her memoir. So I found all of this in her memoir, which I had to cut from 600 pages to 300 pages because it was a lot, you know, so because we're not doing Missioner anymore. We want to do shorter books. So this book is about 300 pages. You know, and so that's a good size book right now. So when she got to England, she met Lady Astor, and I didn't realize until I wrote this book, a lot of things I didn't realize, even though I was raised by her and hung out with her, but Lady Astor was an American from Virginia. You're in Virginia, aren't you? Virginia, Karen?
Where I live, my house is on land that used to be owned by George Washington. In Mount Vernon area.
So, yeah. Well, that's cool. Well, Lady Astor was raised in a medium-sized money family in Virginia, and she ended up marrying one of the five richest men in the world. And she ended up becoming the first woman as an American to sit in Parliament in England, where she sat for 28 years. And she spoke out for women, laborers, and children. She tried to get, you know, all the children out of the factories and all of that. And she was a Christian Scientist, and she had all six of her children without any doctor or nurse around because they didn't believe in doctors and nurses. And she was best friends with George Bernard Shaw. And so my grandmother became her best friend. And I have in my archives, Karen, this is so exciting, 19 letters from Lady Astor to Jesse. And that's the largest collection in the world. I want to try to get them into a museum. I know, because they're so beautiful. They're all about the times, you know. Oh, I spoke to Mrs. Roosevelt. I did ask her to get a job for your husband. I'm not sure how that's going to go. And then my grandfather did get hired by Roosevelt to put together the Social Security whole thing in the whole country. So that was his. So Lady Astor helped him get that job from Roosevelt. And then later when they came back from England, that was later. Jesse spoke all over DC with Eleanor and taught her speech tips. Jesse taught Eleanor. And then Eleanor would invite her to bring her students to one of the White House rooms. I can't remember. It's in the book. and to let her students practice her speeches. So they hung out, you know. I know. Isn't that cool? My grandmother was so cool. She was hip. She was like the Amy Goodman of her time. She was the hip person. And I didn't know that when I knew her because she wore big hats and lots of jewelry, and she smelled funny because, you know, people didn't take a lot of showers because they were afraid of slipping at that age. And so that's how I knew her. And even though she was very, very smart, and I'd listened to her stories over and over, but she was the hip person of her time.
Yeah. And I love it. Like, we think we know somebody like in our family. We think we know them, but it's impossible to know everything of the life they had before you were born. And so I love that you got to dig into her memoirs and, you know, her archives and just learn so much, so many fascinating things about her, you know. That's so cool.
Yeah, we were so close. And it's when she passed away a long time ago, 1986, I still tear up when I talk about her.
Yeah. She's super. I adore both of my grandmothers. I named both of my daughters after each grandmother. Aww. My oldest is Lena, and my middle Lena, L-E-N-A, Lena. Huh? And then my middle child is Grace.
Aww.
So, and my grandmothers are super special, but they weren't famous like your grandma.
Well, most of them aren't, but they affect us. Our grandmothers are so important. You know, they say we're more like, have you heard this? We're more like our grandmothers than our mothers. Like we skip a generation.
No, but I think that makes sense.
Yeah. In my family, it's true. I'm not much like my mother, but in fact, when I was 18, well, anyway, when I was 18, I was kind of eccentric already. I'd always say, well, because I knew her and I loved her so much, I'm going to make a great old lady because I'm already eccentric. And then when she passed away, all the Now Women, you know, National Organization of Women, mm-hmm. came up to me and said, are you going to march in her place? And I said, no, I was a little flippant, even though I wasn't a flippant. I was sort of an innocent young girl. You know, I said, no, my grandmother told me I'm already emancipated from her work. I'm going to go live my life. Well, later on in life, as I had a child, I became just like her. And what I'm against and I speak out against is poisoning and GMO. So, you know, here they are spraying the soccer fields that our kids are playing on and our schoolyards, and they don't need to. I mean, how did we live without poison before the last 60 years, you know, when it didn't even exist? And so that's what I speak out against. And I'm just like her. I'm a little militant about it. So I wasn't going to be like her. And now I am like her. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how else? Well, it probably was impossible for her to not seep into you. You know, mm-hmm. you spent so much time with her, right? She had to seep into you when you weren't noticing. Yeah.
Yeah. And in her early 90s, she took me along all the time. That's why we could be inspired. We're just getting going here, right? In her early 90s, she spoke in Hollywood several times with Gloria Steinem, Marlo Thomas, and Jane Fonda, and she took me along.
Those little names. So you got to meet all those powerful women?
Yeah, and hang out with them too. And later on, I worked for Jane Fonda. She had a summer camp in the hills of Santa Barbara. She was an amazing person. She's so together, and she had this summer camp for kids, and it was a very interesting camp because half of them came from the Cesar Chavez work, you know, farm camps, and half of them came from Hollywood mansions. And so the first week I was there, they sent me her daughter in the camp, and all counselors went, watch out, she's 10, but man, she runs the whole camp. And I was a teacher, so I kind of knew what to do. And the first thing I did was I sat them down and I read them a book. And it was called Hope for the Flowers. It was about this butterfly. It's a really, very sweet book. And then I made her the star of the show. You know, the first night you're supposed to do a camp. And she loved me from then on. And she was a great actress. And so then her sister, the next morning, I go, okay, everybody, make your beds. And her sister was from one of the mansions. She goes, I didn't make my bed. I have a maid. I go, honey, there's no maids here. Just make your bed now. And here we are with the kids from Cesar Chavez camp, you know. And so she had to toe the line, and she ended up liking me too. And then later on, Jane Fonda came up to me and thanked me. And she said, you know, my daughter has been really ruled by this other daughter from my other marriage. And I really want to thank you because I think you saved her. And so that was really nice. And then the last day, for 8 weeks, my husband came to pick me up, and he and Jane cooked dinner for the entire camp.
Well, what a story that is too. I read Jane Fonda's biography or memoir. I don't know which one it is now because it was a while ago, but she is very fascinating. You're right.
Yeah, she would come and she would be rehearsing for a movie. So she'd go hide up in her house, and we could hear her running her lines, you know, and she sent horses from Hollywood. They were, 13 horses. They were all from the Hollywood set, and you'd seen them in movies. You know, there was the two white ones that doubled for each other, and Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. And it was quite a camp. She'd bring in people like Cher. She brought in Paul Winter with his wolves, and because she knew everybody. So I wasn't expecting that. I just came there to be a camp counselor.
What an experience for you. How old were you at this time?
I was about 22. I just met my husband. We weren't married yet. And he went to work at another camp, a Forest Service camp. And I I got hired for this camp, and it was an amazing experience to be there with all those people. And the three women who ran the camp, they would run Tom Hayden, the politician, Tom Hayden, the Chicago mm-hmm. Seven. They would run his campaigns. And so they were running the camp, but they didn't know anything about kids really. And, you know, and even the cook, the cook was the man who had written a lot of the Leave It to Beaver pilots. And it was a very eclectic situation.
It sounds it. It sounds it for sure. Very cool. Okay. So let's transition a little bit up into your work that you do now. Tell me how you think what you do can really help survivors feel comfortable in sharing their story, because it's so personal. Trauma, interpersonal trauma is so personal, and because of personal, the theme of shame often comes up, even though the woman I work with, I tell them, this is not your shame to own. You didn't do this, you know?
That's right.
So how, what's your take, and how do you encourage women to tell their stories?
Well, I would say tell what you're comfortable with for now, because a lot happened to me. I wasn't molested like my grandmother. And when Me Too came out, there were a few of us who almost felt guilty. We didn't want to say it. We didn't want to make people feel bad, because I had known then that 50% of my friends had been, because that just what it was. But when Me Too came out and more people were telling us, it got up to 75%. So it's not, you know, it's more normal than not. And I hate to say that. But so I felt fortunate that I wasn't. But what I'm very strong about, when I get strong, I get really strong, is mm-hmm. that I had a student who was now in her 40s, and she had been with me in her teens, and she wrote on Facebook and said, yeah, I was molested by a man who is, I don't want to ruin his life now though, because he's a grandfather and he's a pillar of our community. And I said, no, you must ruin his life right now, and you must say it, or he'll do it to someone else. So I'm really strong in that aspect, you know. And but when I started writing my memoir, The Cinderella Monologues, now it's called something else because I'm putting out a compilation book called The Cinderella Monologues that other women can participate in and tell their story. And so when I started writing it though, I couldn't. I'd do a little bit, and then I get to this uncomfortable moment, and I go, no, and I'd run away. And I did that for years and years and years. And recently, maybe it was after having a child, in the last 8 years, I've been able to address many of those things, but I couldn't for a while. And there's still some I can't. And some of them are like maybe embarrassing moments or something, you know? And so I don't write about those. Here's my advice. Write about what you can. And don't write about when you get to that point that's really uncomfortable, unless you feel it's cathartic and that would help you. But I couldn't. So I understand that completely. Yeah. I would get to a point, and even now there's a few things where like, no, I'm just not going to tell that one, you know? And so you don't have to tell it all. You can tell the parts you want to tell, or maybe writing would help you to write it and not share it with anyone. And then maybe someday down the road, you know, when we're like getting older and like I'm older now, so I don't care anymore really, you know, as much. So in a way, I want to, and I'm writing mine to help people. I want to write to help other people know that they're not alone, you know. Yeah. That these things happen to a lot of people, and more as an inspiration. So if you think of it that way, and then you know, when Geraldo first came on, you know, and Oprah and mm-hmm. Donahue, most women, as you know, think it's their fault in some way. But when those shows came on and we hear like, oh my god, hundreds of more thousands of women it happened to, and we find out it's not your fault or anybody's fault, but well, you know, and so maybe those shows really, his fault. And so those shows really helped women. They really helped women realize they weren't the only one, because really I still run into some women who think they're the only one or it was their fault. And yeah. I try to help them as best I can. I'm not a counselor, but I've had so many friends that it's happened to. So I think those shows helped a lot, but I think maybe writing about it, maybe reading other people's stories. But when you get to a point, Karen, that is uncomfortable and you just feel like you can't, then don't. Mm-hmm. just write about what you can. But the great thing is you may want to write about something else first. You may want to, like, let's say you're a business person and, like, Karen, you know how to run a lot of things and do a lot of things. So you write about that first. You write about a help book that would help women find their own business. So it doesn't even have to be that, oh, I have this heavy duty story, but I could help you work through yours by giving you more business advice so you can have your own business. So there's different angles to look at. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Well, and it's very solid advice because it's actually how I even do my counseling. You know, I encourage survivors, you share what you're comfortable with sharing, and you are welcome to hold whatever you need to hold for now. But I will be here to bear witness when you're ready, you know, because when you are a child in an abusive situation, you don't have choices. So as an adult survivor, I really work a lot with women on, you have choices and you don't have to do anything you damn don't want to do.
Good.
You know, and when you're ready, we're here.
I bet you're very helpful because I could just feel what you were saying just now. Wow. I mean, really, it tears me up even though that stuff didn't happen to me.
When it happened to women in your family, it happened to you.
Yes. Because, you know, I know one psychiatrist that says all that is your family history. And I feel for that. I'm empathetic.
Empathetic.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I mean, I can really feel that. And I just want to help people. That's mainly who I am. I've always been that way.
I know.
Even as a kid, you know, at night I would pray, could I just go up and help people? I would pray that as a teenager, which is an odd prayer for a teenager, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned about you on the Kindness and Gratitude Summit. I was on it. I was a guest last year and I only got to watch one person this year, actually two people, sorry. And you were one of them.
Oh, I'm so glad. Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so
And
good.
I was like, oh, her heart. I love her heart. You reminded me of myself. I was like, I love her heart.
Oh, that's so great. You know, they're doing it again right now. You can get right on if you want to.
Yeah, I am so, so, so incredibly busy at this moment. But I definitely want to keep participating when I can in that. It's a great summit.
I think so, too. Yeah. I think that one really pushes you forward and gets you exposed to a lot of people. More than a lot of them. Yeah, the Kindness and Gratitude Summit was fantastic. I'm glad you listened. I'm so happy. That makes me so happy.
Yeah. Just something about you was like, oh, I was very short in time. It's like, oh, I'm going to listen. It was very selective.
You know, my next novel, and I was talking about going from poverty to abundance. And one of the main things I've learned is even if you don't have anything, give. Because the giving is what healed me and helped me and actually made me abundant. And even when I had nothing, I was always the one who would give. I mean, I'll make you dinner. Okay. You know, and so I'm writing my new novel. Okay. This is a secret.
Well, you know, my podcast listening range is, I do have it on in India now. Ooh, so somebody in India might hear your secret.
Maybe the secret is about a girl. Well, I'm not telling you who it is because she has like two parts and only a secret giver. So anyway, it's more like to inspire the world to give more. Cause it seems like the more I give, the more I get, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, we don't do it for that reason. Well, I don't, but it just seems like I can't be afraid to give because it always comes back to me tenfold or more.
Yeah. That was what was striking about you is like, even on the summit, you were freely giving of your, like you were offering, and that's how I got to talk to you more. You were offering like free consultations.
Yeah.
And a lot of people offer free consultations, right? Including myself, but for small windows of time, like you were just so generous. I think you offered an hour. I was like, whoa. You know, for me, that was like, even though you were talking about the book field, the author field, I was like, I have to talk with her for an hour. That's an amazing opportunity. And it was just so generous.
Right? Yeah. Interesting that. Well, want to talk about the books just for a second here, the ideas for people to write. Cause you know, what I'm doing with people is giving them permission to not always write the the long book, mm-hmm. you know, but to write your short book. Do you know the shortest book you can put on Amazon and still get a spine, because you want a little bit of a spine, is 36 pages. So what I'm having people do is write your 36-page book. Let's get up on Amazon so you can hold it. Oh, here's my book, you know, and it's a lot easier to self-publish than people think. And then that way, a lot of people are using that for the outline for their longer book. So here's my short book that just came out that actually I'm giving you to give to everybody, a PDF, 101 surprising tips to promote your book. And so here's the difference in, you know, 300 pages. 70 pages. And so a lot of people are coming to me and going, you mean I don't have to write the long book? I could write a short book. And then maybe they will never get to their longer book, but at least they have the option. And I'm having people also see, the great thing about Amazon is that you can, it's called KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing. Mm-hmm. When you go on there, let's say your book is only half done. I have one student and he listened to me. He went on and he made the book so he could hold it and have it. It's not even done, but he's starting to look at it like, oh, I want my page numbers down here or up here, you know, and see what you like. And so I encourage everyone to open 10 books on their bookshelf at home to see what format they like so they can start working with that. And then Amazon has templates. So you download a template right into the template. I swear to God, it will be so much easier in the end. And then the greatest thing about Amazon, just the greatest thing of all almost, is that you can get samples of your books way ahead and you can give them to beta readers, the first readers, or you can... just so you can look at them. This book has 98 rare pictures in it from my grandmother. And so it took 8 samples to get it right. My dog book that I had to write afterwards, Fluffy Dog Book, because this was so heavy with footnotes and metadata and everything, that the dog book only took 1 sample. So most books would only take 1 sample. I don't suggest doing pictures. You can't do color pictures or your book costs a lot. But see, this book here is $4.50 as a sample. And then I buy later that I can sell myself because it goes for $17.95. Good price for a book like that. This book is $2.25 for a sample. And then I can sell it for $10. So Amazon's amazing what they're offering us right now. It's never been easier. It's never been offered like this. And you could even get yourself right through it. Of course, I teach classes how to do it and all the tricks and all the things. And this book, which all of you can get through Karen, the PDF, will really get you started. You know,
it talks about, say the title for the podcast listeners?
Yeah, 101 surprising tips to promote your book or anything really. And it also says when, because you want to put a subtitle on your books, right? When and how to build hype. Because, you know, the tree thing, I always say the best time to start building hype was a year ago or 2 years ago. And the next best time is today. So, you know, get your Twitter and all that in order. And even if you're going to publish traditionally or try to, they're going to ask you, what are your followings right now? It's just one of those new things they're doing. So there's a lot to it, but it's a lot easier than you think. Another idea is to be in a compilation book. This is one I'm in. And
Create Positive Change Now is the title.
Yeah. And my whole story of abundance is in this book. And then I helped put together 3 books in January. So they let me be in the compilation books for doing that. And so I was in 2. And then, but that's just a fantastic thing. Right now I'm offering women to be in my book, The Cinderella Monologues. And I'm not charging very much. I'm doing a really small fee just to get people in and get the book out and get the stories out to inspire other women. And so that's something else I'm offering right now.
Yeah. And what I love about the collaboration projects, I mean, I've been in 4 of them so far, is it does, like what you were just saying earlier, like there's pieces of your story that you're ready to share. And so you can just, the compilations allow you just to share that piece. You don't have to tell the whole damn thing, you know?
Exactly.
And I noticed in 2 of the compilation books I've been in, I would tell one story and I never ever dreamt I would be ready to tell a different part of the story in the second book. You know, and they were both really, really hard for me to write, but the freedom I felt afterwards is really profound, you know, so I do.
I love that. And then you could also take those 2 stories and have them as long as they gave you the rights to that, you know, some do and some don't, then you could, they could be in your bigger book that's going to come up.
Yep. Yep. One day, sister.
No hurry. There's no hurry. And think about the short book, you know, okay, there's another way of looking at this. Okay. This is 300 pages and it has like five different sections of her life. So I'm going to take it apart and make shorter books, five shorter books of these. In fact, I have one client, she had 500 beautifully written blogs. And I said, oh my God, girl, you've got five books there. Let's just put you, let's start thinking about what do we already have written? Poetry, you know, blogs, articles. Let's just start putting the things we already have written into books and get some books in our hand. Because the way Amazon works is the more books you have, it builds your algorithms. And so you get more sales through that. Not that you have more books particularly, but also when you are in these compilation groups, and I'm sure you are, you get an author page on Amazon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you're already an author. You're an instant author. And so there's a lot of ways of looking at it, you know, and I think everyone should be an author somehow, some way.
Somehow. It's so fun. I had it in 2020, I started working on a sort of a vision board. I worked on a vision book. And where I could be creative with. And out of the 10 things I set for goals in 2020, I accomplished 9 of them. And one of them was to be an author. And I did have the little negative thought, well, that's just too big to do right now with my work schedule and having 3 children and blah, 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 blah. But then after I had written out that vision, I learned about the collaboration project. And got asked to be, you know, I got this, yeah, I all of a sudden that opened my eyes to seeing other authors that were working on collaboration projects. And I got involved in 2 right away after having that goal. So it's just really cool.
You know, that's a very powerful thing to do. I talk about that in this book when I talk about abundance. And what happened to me was people were talking about lists a long time ago. So even like 30, 40 years ago, I made a list and I just kind of put it in my drawer and I put little things too, floss more, you know, I had a list of health and then I had big things, giant things like run a theater, publish books. And I looked at it 2 years later and I had accomplished every single thing on the list.
Right?
So then I wrote a new one and put it in my closet for a while. And then I looked at that and that was about 10 years later and I accomplished all of that. So I think writing it down and putting it up, you know, I took a workshop with Jack Canfield recently. And he said that he got 147 rejections from traditional publishers. And so he finally took the name of his book typed up and he cut out the New York Times bestseller list from the New York Times. And he put it up on his wall and he put his little typed name of his book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, up in that paper.
Yeah, that little book.
And then what happened was finally he found a publisher, but the publisher was going out of business. And obviously the publisher didn't go out of business. And then he started his book. So, you know, just to hear all those stories inspires us.
It's so inspiring. Yeah. 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 And that's going back to, like, you know, women like your grandma, like, despite the adversities, despite the traumas, despite poverty, despite, you know, she had a vision, a dream, and she implemented it step by step. It's very powerful.
I don't know why. She must have had some kind of karma that put her in the front line of everything. It was just one of those things, you know, and yeah. And what I like to tell people is no matter where you came from and no matter what's happened to you, you can be anything. None of that
do anything.
Matters. Yeah, anything. Yes. I mean, I grew up in gangland. I know I look blonde and everything, but it was like extreme gangland. And my brother didn't make it out. But I was kind of doity-do. I was kind of a dork and I was really tall and no one would date me. Thank God. and so I got through. I got through it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very powerful. Okay. So our listeners today will get a free copy of your book, which is extremely generous. Can you tell them too about your workshop? Because one of the things I love about your workshop is it's very affordable. So even women who don't have a lot of money would be able to afford this. It's not hard to come up with $27 usually. Yeah. Just skip out one dinner out. Right. And
yeah,
usually
or maybe it was more than a week twice. Of coffee.
Or I'm sorry?
A week of coffee.
Right.
Well, a week of coffee. That may not be possible. Yeah, it's called Write Your Short Book in a Day, and we go for 5 hours. I make it really fun. We do 20-minute spurts of writing. Then I go through some of the little publishing hacks and little stories of other people, what they did and how they did it. And then we go back to 20 minutes. And by the end of the day, a lot of people have a really good start on the book, or if they really listen to me and just wrote how I put it, they actually can finish their 36-page book. And then, you know, anybody could write a 36-page book on something you know in a day or two and then work on it, get it edited. We don't want more bad books. And then put it up on Amazon and get it published in a week or two. That's totally possible. Please get the sample in your hand. Because, you know, right now, too, we don't have to make every chapter long. Some of my chapters are one page. Some are 2 pages. Here's 2 chapters that are just 1 page each. Whoops, I know it's not showing very well. Sorry. Anyway, so we're doing a thing where we go, oh, maybe double space between paragraphs, which they're doing in some of the major novels on New York Times bestseller list. I listen to books on tape, but as soon as I'm done with it, I have to go to Amazon every single time and buy the book so I can see the format.
You told me that because I bought your book electronically. You're like, oh, no, you need to go buy soft cover too.
Yeah. Because I can't see it electronically, and I'm listening to books on tape, but every single time, like one had texts in it, and I'm writing a novel that has texts in it. Wasn't sure how should the text look in the book. And so I went back to buy the book to get the format.
Well, authors appreciate you for doing that, I'm sure. Okay. And is there like the Cinderella monologues? Is it too late for people to get involved in that? If anybody's interested.
I'm still taking people for about, you know, another month to get into it, 2 weeks or a month. And once we get our quota, we're going to have a few writing workshops around it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so people can ask questions or whatever they need to do. And it's not hard to write. It can be between 2,500 words and 5,000. So it's not hard to write that many words. It will go and you may go, oh my God, I need more. But so it's actually, you'll find that it goes really fast. So you're going to have to trim it out probably, you know, and get rid of some of the fluff. But because anybody can write a book, we're going to edit it and we're going to make it look professional. And we're going to make a really good looking, because I'm looking at some compilation books. And not all of them look good inside. Like I'm really a good bookmaker and I have a team that works with me, a small team. And we're going to make it a totally pro looking book. It's beautiful.
I totally believe it. I can't wait to get my hands on it. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. And I have a couple of people I think might be ready to tell parts of their story. I have one client. She wants me to write a book with her.
Ooh.
And I think that will be pretty special, but she's got some struggles that she really needs to. I need people to feel safe and feel that their mood is a bit more stable. Otherwise it feels like exploitation. And so I'm not about that. So I told her that when I felt she was really in a good headspace, then I would certainly entertain doing that with her.
Well, and the thing is, maybe she could write a small piece like this and then use it as a note, have it back again, because of course, everybody owns their rights, in my opinion. And because this book that I'm in this one, you know, From Poverty to Abundance, I'm actually making it into a short book. Like it's going to be 36 pages or 42 pages. And I'm adding a little bit to it, but I'm making it into a very short inspirational book called the Abundance Club.
So, like, Abundance Club.
Yeah. I'm going to call it that because
I want to be in your Abundance Club.
Yeah. I have one on Facebook. I have a page on Facebook you can go like called the Abundance Club. Cause that, guess what? That's a secret way to preserve your name. You can't copyright names. My one friend was naming her book Heartwood, one word. And there were 20 books called that. So I said, well, let's look it up for 2 words, Heartwood. And there were only 5. So she renamed it Heartwood. But so if you pick a name for your book, but someone else has it, you can still have it. You can't copyright them. But I have a secret. Okay. You go on to Facebook and you make a Facebook page, business and community, both. And you name it that book, even if you don't do anything with it and don't invite anybody. But when people look up the name of that book, like the Cinderella Monologues, they're going to find me all over the internet and they probably won't name their book that.
Excellent, excellent tip. We appreciate that. Okay. And are you comfortable telling the fee for the to be a contributing author in that series?
Yeah, it's only $4.97. I know all the events we're doing are charging like $1,500, $2,000. Right. So I'm just making it affordable, you know, what it's going to cost to put it together and the whole thing. So $4.97 and you become a published author.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I'm definitely telling some clients that have trauma histories that I think would be, it's time for them to start telling their parts of their story. So I'm so thankful to know you.
Oh yeah. Well, MilaJohansson.com, you can see all the, you can click onto the banner that says the Cinderella Monologues and read all the stuff you get with it. All the what's going to be required, but also what all attributes you get.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mila. You're so beautiful inside and out. It's such an honor to know you.
You too.
Yeah. Any last inspiring words you'd like to throw out to our listeners?
Well, I always like to quote Oprah, that she says, we have to reinvent ourselves until the end. Mm.
Excellent. All right. Well, listeners, I hope you feel blessed as I am to have Mila on with us today. And until next time, thank you.
Thank you for listening in today. Please join us next week, same day and time. Also, I would love for you to check out my website, healthrivedream.com.